Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello, it's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Stan Godwin, Patricia Maslin and Eamon Barkley of No One Likes Us Talking. And team, the first game of the season against Preston North End is 2 weeks away tomorrow, so it's fast approaching. And pre-season off in Portugal has been going really rather well.
Yeah, the football's been going well. The fans haven't been too happy,
Why haven't they been allowed to go?
Well, Harris did say that all the games would be behind closed doors. It was a closed session. And suddenly we find out that the Fleetwood fans have been invited along for their game. And yeah, there was a bit of uproar on social media. I think the club responded very quickly on a Sunday. They apologised on the website, but I don't think it washed with a lot of fans.
Well, I mean, as I understand it, John, I mean, I did see a picture of, I think it came from the commercial department of Millwall, where they'd actually laid on people to go. They paid out about £2,000 or something, but it wasn't for...
It was just for commercial supporters, the commercial side. They was
sponsors.
Offered a package. For, yeah.
Sponsors, it was based and faced to.
£2,500.
Why wouldn't the club want proper fans to go?
Well, I think that was something that was probably overlooked. And I think there were some fans out there. But the real issue, I think you've got to look at it in two ways. Yes, you've got the issue where the game was supposed to be behind closed doors, and I think we all get that Neil Harris isn't keen when he's got these weeks away to have all sorts in there. He just wants to look at the side and not have them being distracted. We did get a quote from Billy Taylor, the Director of Communications at Millwall. In fact, George spoke to him this morning. And what Billy said was, as far as they were concerned, the game was going to be played behind closed doors. And that's what they believed until people started to turn up. What they'd done, unfortunately, and this is Billy's words, not anybody else's, was they lost sight of what was going on. And they should have picked up before the game was ready to go that Fleetwood had announced that people could go and watch.
Can I just counteract that? On the Fleetwood website, they had their full fixture list for Portugal. Where Millwall was supposed to be, they had to be arranged.
That's right.
Now, I believe Millwall have told them to keep it off. Now, they can't say that they didn't expect fans out there because they've offered a package of £2,500 to certain fans. They could have, I know it's a lot of money, but they could have opened that up to everybody. I'm sure there'd been a few more willing to pay that for a five-star hotel out there.
I'm sure there'd be a lot more, but that was never, according to Billy Taylor, what Millwall's intentions were, and that's how they levelled their apologies. You can only take what you get from the horse's mouth, and you're right, the Fleetwood website did have to be arranged, which makes you wonder whatever their intentions were to be. But perhaps they made the faux pas in the first place by losing sight of the fact that this game was to be behind doors. Will we ever find out the whole truth, the nothing but the truth? Well, so no, help
you,
me.
You probably won't, but you see, to me, this particular incident is just another incident which has been occurring on sort of, and in the past they've been little things, but all of a sudden it all gets changed. And there's definitely, I've got no doubt, there's definitely a lot of cases where they're now looking to now make money out of it. I mean, to give you a simple example, John, we every now and again we'd have a beanbag at the Den, okay? And before, what would happen would be that you'd pay £10. And in that beanbag, you pay your £10, you get a sausage and egg or something meal, and then you've got the pay bar there, and then you could park your car in the car park.
That is a proper deal.
That's
for proper
right.
fans.
Right. What's happened since when we've had it, it's now £12, no meal, and they now charge you £2 for parking in the car park.
And so it's like, what are you paying for?
Well, that's the thing. Now, all I'm saying is, all of a sudden, there are little changes coming along.
Do you think the club don't care as much about the fans as they used to?
Well, I can understand them wanting to make money and putting things up, but to blatantly lie to the fans to say it's behind closed doors, when the manager had a Q&A session with the fans that did go before they went.
That's a very open door, isn't it, Pat? Really?
Exactly. Be honest with us. That's all I'm asking, because I think they were blatant lies.
I just think, you know, they got caught out, and you know, I mean, as I say, you got this thing, because the moment they come out with "it wasn't the rant range," blah blah blah, somebody then put a tweet on the thing and had the picture. They had the picture on it,
2,500.
Yeah. Yep.
Could have all gone there if we were sponsors. Certainly, two of us around this table could have done.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
So there you go, but we didn't. And that was what we missed out on.
Well, it happens. And you, of course, have a lot of football to look forward to, a lot of chances to see Millwall this season. There's been other pre-season action too. What happened when you took on Braga?
Wasn't a very good game. I think it was very low-key. A good side, Braga, but I think we weren't bad. Smith didn't impress. I wasn't very impressed. I thought Fielding was at fault for both goals. I don't know what you thought. Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it, but I've read this week, you know, you get people, they get themselves excited over all these pre-season friendlies, don't they? And at the end of the day, you know, it's all about fitness, trying out different systems or possibly different players in different positions and whatever. I mean, I don't care if we lose the next two. I'm more interested that when the opening day of the season comes in, we get where it matters, the 3 points, is when we get it then.
Oh, I think there's a good point to focus on, and that's progress. Because the last time we played Braga, we lost 3-0. This time, we lost 1-2.
Why do you play Braga so frequently?
I think it's got something to do with some old goalkeeper that we've got who arranges these games out in Portugal. And that's how we end up playing them. But let's not forget, these were number 4 in the Premier League in Portugal. So playing up against someone of that, some side of that ability, I think it weren't a bad turn. And as you say, Stan, it isn't everyone going at 110 miles an hour. We're not looking for 3 points or whatever.
Yeah.
We're trying to do what the manager and the coaching team has asked people to put into practice and gel that team together. I mean, at the end of the day, this is going to be a team with a lot of new faces that's got to gel and work as a team. So all of this, I think, bodes well for the future. And there were some bright lights out there. The young lad, Bury, I think he's going to be a cracker. And a lot of people have no sight of the fact that he's in Millwall's side. People are asking, who's he? I've missed him. Well, he's a young lad that come from Wimbledon. He's 17 years old. And I tell you what, he ain't a bad... However we got him, he's not a bad price.
You were calling to see younger players featuring the side more towards the end of the last Championship season. Are you expecting this lad to be in the team a bit this year?
Well, perhaps on the bench to start with.
Go on.
I was impressed with Mahoney. I mean, a 22-year-old winger, left foot,
yeah,
really good. I think that's our best signing of the season or close season. I don't think the team will change that much apart from the new signings up front. I think our back four are quite stable, midfield much the same. I think you'll see all the changes up front.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that with, you know, this young kid from Wimbledon, I mean, I've heard one or two people speak about, I've not seen him, right? Now, I'm not suggesting for a minute that when we play Preston, he's lined up and can play the first 10 games. I'm not saying that. But what I'm getting at is, it comes back, doesn't it? You don't know how good these kids are going to be until you play them. And it's no good bringing them on 5 minutes from the end, right? You know, they're on the bench and you think, oh, well, we've got 5 minutes to go, we bring them on. All I'm saying is there's got to be a time when you just sort of give them half hour here in one game and perhaps, you know what I mean?
Would you start them?
I've not seen them. I don't know. I mean, I saw last season, I saw George...
Alexander?
Yeah.
Right, not a bad pedigree on him, of course.
The only I think he's a good player, right? But when I was watching him, he was in the academy side, and straight away I thought myself, well, he's not big enough in terms of he needs to fill out a bit more, right? And I think he would possibly struggle a bit in the. For that reason, in the championship. Now, he came on, I didn't see the last game, but apparently he came on and he did okay, which is fine. But I just think that's of an obvious difficulty.
I think at the end of the day, and to put it in context, is any of these people can come on and they can start and they can come on late wherever you like. Because you're going to set your side up to start a game against known abilities and skills of the opposition. So I'm not fixed on whether we start off with youngsters and start punching pace through because it'll wear the opposition down and then bring on some of the older hands to wrap it up. I think it's all about setting yourself up against what the opposition can throw at you.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously got to go for 50 points straight off start of the season, haven't we?
Yeah.
I don't think Harris is going to put youngsters in to start. I think we're going to be very regular like we were last year, the same players you're going to see. Till we get those 50 points, he might start taking chances then. I do think our under-23s this year are going to be brilliant to watch and as good as the first team. And I'm definitely going to see them more.
But hang on, if the under-23s are going to be as good as the first team,
well,
and they're younger, or no,
not
but
championship standard.
I know what you mean, but even getting towards that level, isn't it worth taking the risk to an extent?
Yes, I'd go with that. I think there are people that you can take risks with, and that's been done time and time again throughout the ages with young players coming into sides, and they show the magic and can do it. Some people will argue it's possible to destroy a young player's ability, and the psychological side of it can knock them right back down.
But if you do that, aren't they in the wrong line of work anyway, Eamon?
Yes,
I mean, I'd agree with you. I've just recently I've heard, you know, that this current crop of youngsters is, you know, it's all encouraging, they're good, and this, that, and the other. I'm fine. I've got no problem with that. If that's what I'm being told, then fine. But it wasn't so long ago, a couple of years ago, we had a number of youngsters then playing. That we were told, Twardek, and there was Pavey, and all these names. They've all come in, and they've all gone. Right? Now, what I'm saying is, you know, all right, they're doing well in the academy system and whatever, but at some point, somebody's going to have to take the ball by the horns and suddenly say to some kid, right, you're in, right? Now, but the fact of the matter is, in a lot of cases, managers are governed by fear, aren't they? Because if they're looking at, oh, well, we can't do that because if we get relegated, I'm under pressure and all the rest of it. Well,
but Neil Harris ain't in that position, is he? I think there's enough backing to what he does for him to feel reasonably confident about the side that he will put out at any time. Because I think we don't know all what happened towards the end of last season, but I think there are things that we can somewhat assume. And we can assume that there was a lot of not so nice things going on, that he had to deal with a lot of aggravation, and he dealt with it quite well. And it never started to filter out until the last couple of games of that season.
When you were safe.
That's right. And he did, and he kept it. And I think the board, the chairman, and I wouldn't say all the fans, but I think there's a lot of fans who admire him for what he's done. So I think he's got the confidence to make sound judgment about who he plays, when he plays them. And you're right, Pat, we have got a team at under-23 level, I think, that is going to be challenging ever so well right across the piece at that level.
I mean, we've got this young kid, haven't we? James Brown. He was. I think he's a right back. He's been out on loan. Right, he's injured now.
He is.
So that's not his fault. But there was a suggestion, right, that before he got injured, well, he might well come in and whatever, and all right. But look at Marlon Romeo. When Marlon Romeo steps in the team, right, he come in and he's been. And the first time I see him, in the game afterwards, he looks as if he's played in that team for about 6 months.
Yeah, and look at him now.
Yeah,
he
that's
has.
What I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Until you do that, you're never going to know.
Well, and it sounds like a very optimistic time to be a Millwall fan with these lads coming through. Coming up, we're going to have a former great on the line, so don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Robbie Ryan, former Millwall left-back, a real legend, 226 league appearances, won the second division title in 2001, and his last appearance for Millwall was in the 2004 FA Cup final. Robbie, thank you for joining us. What was the highlight of all those highs?
Yeah, how you doing, OK? Yeah, obviously... I suppose the FA Cup barring the results, as I said, to be honest, I think it was there for 6-7 years, and nearly every year we were obviously competing for something, whether it be, as you said, one obviously League Two, obviously the playoffs for the Championship, and obviously rounded off with an FA Cup final appearance, to be fair. So it was great times, a great 6.5 years of my life, to be honest.
And when you were there, what kind of reception did you get from the Millwall fans?
Yeah, great reception, and even now, I don't go back that often. Obviously, I work nights now, so it's difficult to get down there. But even if I go down there now, I always get a great reception off the fans. And I just think, as I said, the time I was there was obviously 6.5 years, and as I said, every year we were nearly competing for something. So I think it was a good time to obviously to be at the club. And the fans are always great to me, to be honest.
Yeah, Rob, this is Stanley. Do you still work on the for TFL on the, was it the permanent way?
That's it. Yeah, TFL. Yeah, I do cables. Yeah, so I'm actually working tonight. To be fair, to hard life.
Right. Well, you're a TFL man after me. Oh no, I used to work on the underground. Yeah. I was a driver.
Yeah,
but anyway,
mate.
Anyway, so what? I've listened to your interview when you've given it about when you've talked about the cup final. Let me ask you this. Clearly, he was up against Ronaldo. Did you find him when you was playing him? Was he harder than you thought he was, or wasn't he as hard as you thought he might have been? I'm sure, you know, I don't mean hard in knocking you about, but
yeah, no. Obviously, it only sort of broke on the scene, I think probably 3 months earlier. So I knew by watching him on television that it was an out and out winger. Do you know what I mean? So he's obviously gonna take you on inside and outside. So you could see by him that he was. Obviously, at that time, I think he was only 18 or 19, so you knew he was going to be, probably the best player in the world, but you knew then that he was going to be a hell of a player, and obviously, I think Man United did pay a lot of money for him. His quality, at that time, he was tall. I know he was probably skinny, but you could see that he was ready to fill out, you know what I mean, and be big and muscly, and as I said, he was tall, and he just goes both ways, doesn't he? He can go inside and outside, and he's so dedicated as well, do you know what I mean? You read about when he's always trained and putting in the extra hours, etc. And I suppose that's what makes him one of the best players in the world, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. He is a bit of I'm the number one man. But I mean, to be fair, he does do his training and all that. I mean, you can't argue about his dedication.
But yeah, don't worry about his dedication. Worry about Robbie's dedication. When we had Alan Dunn on the show here a couple of weeks ago, he said this was the best bloke that had ever marked Ronaldo from outside the top flight.
Well, Robbie's
dedication.
Robbie's dedication is not in question as far as I'm concerned.
That's good.
Robbie, it's Pat here. Hello, it was there. A great day. Hi. It was a great day at the Millennium, but do you consider the semi-final an even better day when we beat Sunderland? I mean, to every Millwall fan, I think they prefer that day.
Yeah, I've obviously spoke to Millwall fans, and even obviously my family flew over for it, and my wife and her family, I think they ended up getting a limousine up there, and they said that was the best day ever, do you know what I mean? But from obviously because you won that, and obviously the crowd is buzzing, I mean, obviously for the player to play in the finals, obviously better than the semi-finals, you know what I mean? But I think from a fan's point of view, probably didn't expect us to beat Man United. Whereas obviously winning the semi-final after the game, they were all still buzzing. And whereas maybe after the cup final, after getting beaten, the fans might have been a little bit deflated. So probably from a fan's point of view, I can see why they say that the semi-final was better. But even though the final wasn't a great game, from a player's point of view, to play unfortunately it wasn't Wembley, but they're playing an FA Cup final, will obviously be better than the semi-finals, you know what I mean? But I do, as I said, a lot of fans do say that their day out was Old Trafford.
Robbie, hard to top an opponent in terms of quality on Cristiano Ronaldo, but who was the best teammate you worked with at Millwall?
I suppose I always look at Lucas. I just remember Lucas Neal, probably because when I was there, he didn't play all the time, and you think to yourself, how is he not playing at Millwall? And obviously, no disrespect. And then he's moved to Blackburn and gone on to have a great career. And then even Tim, I remember like training with Tim and playing with Tim, and thinking, Tim's a great player. But then I remember, I think Tim had like, done his cruciate, and I remember he come back out like literally 5 months probably, and in training, he just knocked me off the ball. I'm thinking, what's happened there? And Tim actually come back 5 times a better player after he'd done his cruciate. He just got much stronger. So it was probably the two Australians. I don't want to say that, but it was probably Tim and Lucas, to be fair. But we had some good players. I mean, I loved playing with Steve Claridge. Obviously, he was a bit older and wiser, but for me, being a fullback, he was always looking for the ball, and he was always an outlet for me, do you know what I mean? And obviously, my best mate, Richie, who obviously unfortunately got injured. And again, he was just starting to... He was getting better with every game, and every season that went by, he was getting stronger and better. Unfortunately, he obviously had to retire through injury, to be honest. I mean, we had some great players, to be fair, didn't we? Like three or four, like Stephen Reid, we had three or four top players, to be fair.
Yeah, you nearly had a team strong enough to put in the whole of the Irish squad, I reckon, at one stage.
better than me, yeah.
Oh, you could have got there yourself. You've never known. Anyway, I'm sorry I woke you up the other morning. It's Eamon, you know.
That was fine.
But there you go.
Just when you rang, I was just all over the place. I'm like, what?
It was all good fun. There's a question. Johnny was asking Alan when he was on about... Sean Dyche, and what he was saying that Martin Allen had come on the Love Sport Radio, and he talked about new players being exposed to a Sean Dyche feat. Do you remember anything about that? I am
the worst. Like, you tell, it's not me like ducking and diving. No. I can't remember anything.
Nothing to do with eating worms or anything like that.
No, what? You got me intrigued now.
I'll come back to you later on and I'll talk that one through to you. But it's definitely.
I might have to text him.
Yeah, you'll have to. Yeah, Martin Allen said that about him. But we'll have to get Dyche in here himself. That'd be the only way to get to the bottom of it.
Robbie, obviously, you've got a cracking job now with TFL, but initially after your retirement, how did you handle that switch from being a star player to not playing football anymore?
A star player, yeah. to be honest, I found it difficult. Maybe working nights I found it more difficult, but I knew, I'm not saying that, obviously, when I left Millwall, I look back now and to be honest, I think the minute I left Millwall, my career probably stood on down to my own fault, really. I sort of lost a bit of heart, if truth be told, and I went to Bristol, and I didn't really want to go, but I sort of nowhere to go, and I sort of signed a bit without wanting to sign, and obviously that probably showed him a performance, and then obviously got injured, etc., and didn't work out, and all of a sudden I knew then that was, and it was only probably 29, but I knew then that I'm in League 2, and I'm thinking, well, there's not really anywhere, I'm not like I'm 20, and there's nowhere for me really to go, and I started then thinking about, what am I going to be doing after football? And so I was quite lucky that the job sort of, my friend got me the interview and sort of come along, and I did find a hard working night. But as I said, if I stopped from Millwall and then gone straight into a job, I would have struggled. But I think when I was at Bristol, I sort of knew to myself that, do you know what, you're only going to be, if you move from Bristol after the 2 or 3 years I'd had at Bristol, I'd only be going to, no disrespect, but like a League 2, like Dagenham or something like that. So I thought to myself, well, when the TFL offered me the job, I thought, well, do you know what? I am 20 years old and maybe I can play part-time and do that. So I didn't see it coming, but I was waiting for it to come. And the thing I found out was working nice, to be honest, but I didn't find the hard going from playing football to working. And I think the only fact being is that my career was, every year was getting lower and lower. So it was sort of, I knew it was coming, do you know what I mean? So it made it probably a bit easier, to be honest, because then when the job came, I knew I had to take it because I hadn't left from a championship club going straight into a job. I think I would have found that really difficult, to be honest.
And Robbie, just finally, if you had to come up against Cristiano Ronaldo now, how do you think you'd get on?
Will I kick him? I don't know if I've watched that game, but I remember I think Dennis said to me at half time, he says, you had a chance there to kick him after like 2 or 3 minutes, and maybe I should have kicked him out. It's hard, I didn't listen at the end of the day. I think you can see, boy, and people try and kick him, and he just comes back and even stronger. And then if I got booked out for 2 minutes, then you're on a yellow card for 88 minutes. So it's a hard one. So I don't know what I'd do.
Well,
maybe pull my hamstring.
That's the easy solution, isn't it?
No, really? Listen. For me to play against Ronaldo was obviously a great day. And like yourselves, I still, 10 years later, I'm still getting phone calls from people and papers asking me about him. So it's, looking back now, it's quite nice to say I've tried to make him.
Tried and I'm sure succeeded. Exactly. Robbie, thanks ever so much for your
thanks,
time.
Thanks, Robbie. Nice
to be here again. Thank you.
Ta-da. Lovely to speak to you. Robbie Ryan, their former Millwall left-back, who, of course, did have the unenviable task of dealing with Cristiano Ronaldo. A quick update for you as well, because this week Joe and Amy Barr brought a great update on their daughter Elise on their Twitter site, Elise's Wish to Walk. The update was the 1 year post-op, and it was really positive. She's ahead of where they thought she might be. Ben Stroud, her physio at White Cliffs CrossFit Dover, said, "When I first started with Elise, I asked her what her dream was. She said to run faster than my big sister CJ. If you've seen the videos on Twitter, then you will be amazed. We're going to have Joe and Amy on the show soon, so we won't spoil their story, but we will say that Mum and Dad are oh so very proud of the little man, Elise's brother, who has never bemoaned the attention she receives and always supports her. What a wonderful family, and what a wonderful show we've got coming up for you, because in just a moment's time, it's time for Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for our Legend of Guys. Who have you gone for this week?
Well, it was a bit of a shock last week. I think it threw people into a bit of dismay, because we asked a few of the fans, and because Pat had bemoaned last week's legend, who was raised by an American fan, who was Casey Keller. So one of the fans... I think it's Vicky Smith from Kent, I think, said it's got to be Harry Cripps. And Harry Cripps it is.
And I'd agree with her.
Well,
I think Mr. Millwall, Harry Cripps, deserves the title of legend.
So why does he deserve such a big honour?
He wasn't...
I don't think you've got long enough to explain it on here. I mean, the thing about Harry Cripps, he wasn't the greatest... He wasn't the greatest fullback in the world, and he didn't claim to be, but he played for Millwall, and the moment the Millwall crowd saw him, they just took to him. There was something about him that the moment they saw him...
But it wasn't because he came from West Ham, was it? That was
well,
it.
I don't know. I suppose they worried about
no,
that.
No, they didn't.
I don't think he ever had a first-team game for West Ham.
He didn't.
No,
he didn't.
No, he was in the youth side.
And he was in... Actually, he was in the same FA Youth Cup side as old Bobbinson and Bobby Moore.
Yeah, well, at one point, when Bobby Moore was the manager at Southend, Harry Cripps was back there. It was one of his coaches.
Yeah,
out there. I was listening to a tape the other day, and it was when they showed you when it was a clip there when we played Spurs in the cup in 1967, and the commentator makes you see Harry Cripps get the ball and. And the bloke made the point, he said, they love him here, he said, because every time he gets the ball, Cripps, they just cheer him.
Yeah.
I mean, he just might make a 10-yard square pass, but, you know,
I mean, he wasn't fast, but if he went in for a tackle, there was only one person going to walk away from it, and that would be him.
Oh, no, that's right. I mean, there was just something about him that just, he's always getting mentioned, isn't he? I've been down at Millwall. There are people there that you know have never seen Harry Cripps.
No,
and yet they talk about him as if he was their uncle or their neighbour.
Yeah,
they just didn't know about him.
Held in high reverence by every Millwall fan.
Well, and of course, people do ask you, "What's this Harry's bar then?" So you have to tell them the story.
That's right,
you?
Yeah.
So it's not as if it's a mystery. But no, he totaled 400 games for Millwall.
444.
Yeah, you got that wrong. All right, OK. And I got that wrong. But he did beat Jimmy Forsyth, who was the previous record holder.
Yeah.
Oh, so, well, that's a bit before my time, Eamon. But I'll take your word for
but
that,
he
mate.
He did. And then that wasn't beaten, I think, until some bloke called Teddy Sheringham, old Johnny's mate, took the title.
Oh, ready, steady, Teddy, eh?
Yeah.
I remember once some years ago, I was down at Millwall and we were playing Fulham and they had Johnny Ains on the pitch and Les Barrett and all these. We beat them 2-0 and we got this, and Millwall got this free kick about 10 yards inside the Fulham half, and Harry Cripps took this free kick and he just hit it.
Yeah.
And it just went straight in the goal. I mean, the goalkeeper just, he just whistled
Where in
by
the goal
him.
Are we talking? Just straight through him?
No, he was just inside the halfway line, right? And he was kicking towards the Colblo Lane end.
The goalie,
but that was shocked Harry more than the crowd. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
It shocked the keeper on because he didn't see it.
Yeah, he just went straight in. I mean, unfortunately, it's not on film. But I mean, had it been, he'd have been a runner for goal of the season. But mind you, though, one of his better goals he scored was in the 1970s when he up at Goodison Park when we beat Everton.
Absolutely. In the cup,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Him and Alfie Woods, eh? I remember that like it was yesterday.
But no, I mean, they just loved him down
there. I don't even think there's a question about is he a legend or not. I think it's a yes.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot in it. And, I mean, you've got to realise that this is a guy that... I remember Eamon Dunphy used to take me for football at school. And old Dunphy used to say, he said, whatever you do... He said, if you're up against someone like Harry Cripps, you've got to go head on and put your body into him. No good for me, but you're a little bit bigger than me. And I remember old Dunphy saying that, but he was right. And of course, he went on to some wonderful things, didn't he? And the one that I mean, we won't mention that he played for Charlton for a while, but we will mention, I think, that he did become a coach at Winchester College, the fee-paying school.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's
Harry
a swanky
Cripps.
One.
He was. He was. That was his last job. And I remember it being written in, I think it was the Times, former Millwall player, now coach at Winchester College.
I wonder what they made of him. Seriously.
Could they understand him?
When he died, if you get
it was quite emotional.
Yeah, and when he died, right, and like you, there's a... Where the old den was, there's one of the old walls, and it's still there.
Yeah.
And the bloke's painting on the wall, Harry Cripps.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
1944 to whenever.
95.
95. Yeah, rest in peace. All that. I mean, it's still... Yeah. I mean, like, when any time they produce a... There's a somebody done a drawings of Legends of Millwall, and Harry Cripps is put in the same category as Barry Kitchener, isn't he? Yeah. And then he would come into the same sort of, I mean, Terry Urlock would be fortunate to be in his company. I mean, they nobody will have nothing to a bad word said about Harry Cripps, and they won't have it.
No.
Well, he's an eternally popular man at the Den, and that's why he is your legend of the week. Well-deserved accolade there. Let's talk transfer rumours. Lots of talk about Jamal Lowe. He's been left out of the Portsmouth squad, which often suggests he could be leaving a club. But is he off to Wigan?
Well, I'd heard, somebody said to me in the week, because I'd read somewhere, somebody'd mentioned about this player, and I thought myself, well, we've now signed the guy from Reading, we've got the guy in from QPR. And I thought to myself, well, I don't reckon he's going to come. And then somebody said to me, oh, well, he's signed for Wigan. I thought, oh, well, that's OK, that's fine. And I'd see something in the paper, I think it was the day or yesterday, which, when I looked at it, clearly implied that he was a Wigan player. Only when I got here tonight, I found out that he ain't. So, I just don't know where we'd fit him in. I don't know if we'd fit him in if he came to us.
Well, Young War Boys, who has his video chat on Facebook, has talked about him tonight with some depth and said it's still a possibility. Not everything's done and dusted. And I don't know. But let's be honest. Is he actually going to leave Portsmouth and go to Wigan or Millwall? Or are there some other bigger fish?
I think he's looking for a premiership side.
Do you think he's going to get a premiership move? Because his figures are quite good, but the Premier League is a serious
step up. It's a big step up. Yeah.
And we're not even talking about the best player in League One, to be honest.
So no. There was a Portsmouth guy who went to a premiership, wasn't there, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
So I can't remember his name, but he got it. So got perhaps it. Jamel's holding out for that.
Find that man. I mean, if you can see that your mate's done it, Why can't you have the belief that you can't do it too? And I'm certainly believe that Kenny Jackett would be delighted, and so would the Portsmouth Bulls, if they could get the, I think it was $5 million that they, whoever it was, paid for the Portsmouth player to go to them. But seeing as we don't look at the old crowds of teams in the top flight too often, we're not that really interested. But if he was to come to us, as Stan said very much earlier on, where are we going to play him?
Exactly. Yeah. We've got Mahoney now. I mean,
that's right, yeah.
You're a big fan of his, aren't you?
I am. After watching him a couple of times, yeah, I think he's going to be a really good player. 22, left-footed, nice winger. I think he's going to...
Nice winger. Yeah. I reckon he could replace Steve Morrison in your Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah. You're without arm's length there. Yeah.
We've got room for a couple more tattoos, but...
Yeah, well, we won't go into that. But then you talk about transfer rumours, wasn't it? And there was this other guy from Barnsley and all, wasn't it? This other forward.
Yeah, yeah.
That he was, I can't think of his name now, but he was being quoted about, supposed to be about £3 million.
He was.
And that's all suddenly got, now, that's all gone quiet.
That seems to be ever so quiet. But you never know what's coming through when things go quiet.
Harris spoke today about getting someone in next week, but I think it's a goalkeeper. I don't think we're going to get anyone else in apart from another goalkeeper.
Really?
I don't believe that. I think there's potentially at least one loanee, if not two. And I do believe we will get one other goalkeeper at least.
I think you're also the right back, because I think it was you, Pat, who made the point, wasn't it, about old the guy from that we signed, if I forget his name now.
Daddy?
Right. Who?
Daddy?
Bovartson? Bovartson?
No, the guy that was... We signed from Bradford.
You mean Meredith?
Meredith.
Meredith.
And he ain't got a squad number. He hasn't got a squad number,
and he's out of contract now.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll see Meredith back
at the
Den.
No, but what I'm saying is, but presumably, yeah, okay, I agree with you, but he's a right back, isn't he?
Yeah.
So presumably, we're looking for a right back as well. If Brown ain't going to make it,
cause I always thought Meredith played on the left, Stan.
Oh, well, Pat said he was a right back.
No, because you've got Romeo, haven't you? Yeah.
Well, I'm only saying what you said to me.
No, I didn't.
Oh dear! More confusion between these two again after
anyway,
the performance
Meredith,
last time.
You won't see him again.
No. I mean, so therefore you're going to want somebody in for him, I would think.
Well, we've got a couple of players still hanging about
there.
Yeah, you got.
You've got quite a few fullbacks there. You've got Wallace.
Yeah,
that's true.
We've got another bloke.
We need a goalkeeper, didn't we?
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, Harris did speak about the issue being about having every position covered and having strength in that. And he knows that there are spots that he hasn't got that. So I think they're on the case. And what they've come up with so far appears to me to be quite good. Some would argue that Matt Smith is not the best. But let the man have a chance, give him his go. He can do the sort of stuff that certainly our man Steve Morrison was unable to do over the last season. So let's hope for it.
We've got
to
a
be
lot
good.
Of new players there. I mean, they've got a gel. I mean, you might say how good they are, but if they don't play well together, and I think that's the trouble with him getting more and more new people in.
And because he's, you know, you've got a couple of players there, haven't we, that can play in a multitude of positions. You've got Fergie. You know, you can play him at fullback if you need to do it, or on the wing.
Or in midfield.
You've then got Murray Wallace, who's another one. I mean, when he first came to us, he was a centre half, but he played on fullback as well. So sometimes, if you've got a couple of players in it that you can play in different positions. You know, if you've got a problem, you just slot them in there, don't they?
Will we see that man from Ipswich, as predicted by Jeff
Bielkowski?
Yeah.
No, it'd be ridiculous, wouldn't it? Two goalkeepers over 30.
Well, it's 1 million. They're best, Pat.
1 million for a goalkeeper, you're not going to play.
Yeah.
You've got to look at someone about 25, 27.
They're not going to pay £1 million.
No, they're not. And that's why you won't see him.
Don't forget, Nigel Spink was 40 years old when he came to us.
We've already got one old boy. We need someone younger.
Pat's having none of it this evening. Yeah. Well, we've got a wonderful finale to the show coming up because we're not scared of any topic here on the Millwall Fan Show. We're delving into the murky depths of current affairs. Whatever could we be talking about? The week.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for our fan in the boardroom. They keep getting in there somewhere. I'm delighted to say this week our fan is Fury Martin, who recently played in the Millwall Legends team at the Den. Fury, thank you for joining us. How confident are you ahead of this season?
Oh, well, I'd like to say a good 95% confident that we could do some real damage this season.
See, when you say 95% confident that we're gonna do the job there, what do you reckon is gonna be the big difference between the team that we had last year to the team that we've got this year? How is that gonna be this 95% confident?
Well, he's brought in a lot of youngsters, new young players, fresh, raring to go. It's going to be a difficult one. watching some of their pre-season games, some of the players look more confident than they did last season.
Yeah, Ben Thompson said that they're in a better position than they were last year, and he filled that out in a quite a positive way. I mean, Neil's still got to sign some players. Who would you like to see him to sign?
See, I'd love to see him sign. I know we've just signed a new striker and he's doing well. He seems up for it. He seems raring to go. He seems fit. He looks the part. He looks unreal in a Millwall shirt. But I'd like to see someone with the same capability as Lee Gregory up front with him. To push that attack even more.
Well, it did say today that to some degree, Bavardson is very much in the frame of Lee Gregory, and Neil Harris said that. What about in the goalkeeping department? Because we've only got the one really, other than the under 23 Ryan Sanford.
Yes. You can't take nothing away from David Martin. Last season, I watched as many games as I could last season due to work, etc. I tried to get down the Den as much as I could. I live on the south coast now. So travelling to and from and trying to get days off of work, trying to get there is, well, you know what it's like. Everyone's got to work. But the games I did see, one of the best games I'd seen all season was the Millwall-Brighton game at the Den in the FA Cup. Every single player out there on that day played with passion. They played with pride for the club. They played for the club and for Neil Harris. Personally, the goalkeeper, I didn't think he did anything wrong apart from that save. I don't know what he thought he was doing. Can't take nothing away from him because it was his first game. And personally, I think he had an outstanding game.
You're not related to him, Fury, are you?
No. I was waiting for someone to say that. No, not at all. Me personally thought he had a fantastic game. Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done there with him. Obviously, him only being young himself. The goalkeeping staff, obviously, have got a lot to push with him.
Well, I suspect Fury, he's enjoying himself now at West Ham, where he's been signed. And that's where they'll spend some time with him. Hopefully, they might give us one of their goalkeepers to back it up. Fury.
Never know. Yeah, never know.
We can only hope. Fury, great to hear you're so optimistic about the season. You've been a wonderful fan in the boardroom. Thanks for your call. Fury Martin there, who was this week's fan in the boardroom. And a quick word on Roy Lana, who is, of course, known as the Lion of London Bridge. If you don't know this story, Roy is the guy who became very famous a couple of years ago for very bravely standing up in a terrorist attack on London Bridge, standing up to these attackers, shouting quite a rude word, suggesting that he is Millwall, and fighting them off. He got reasonably badly injured in that attack and has now been denied compensation by the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority because the law states that victims of crime cannot be entitled to compensation if they have any previous convictions. Mr. Lana has a chain of previous convictions, including racially aggravated common assault. He is, of course, a Millwall fan. Where do you guys stand on this? Do you think he should be compensated?
I think it's disgusting that he's not been compensated. Obviously, he's got those previous convictions you just mentioned, but he was in that bar. Two people come in, branded knives. I mean, your natural reaction, my natural reaction would be to run. That man approached them, he fought them off. I'm shocked that the people in that bar whose lives he saved haven't come forward. He didn't care what nationality they were in the bar. He saved every single one of those from being killed that night. And yet not one of them has spoken out for him. I think it's absolutely disgusting.
Well, I mean, personally, I mean, what's happened to Roy Lana, not just on this particular incident, I think it's an outrage. I mean, you remember the old pictures of the Politburo on the Lenin's tomb, and every now and again they would paint one out as you get airbrushed out of history. But it's like Roy Lana, he's getting airbrushed out of it. I mean, they have the big commemorative service at London Bridge. So he wasn't even invited. You know, and this guy, I mean, whether he's got a criminal record or not,
It's a pretty unpleasant criminal
record. Well, it might be, but I don't know. All I'm saying is you got some guy sitting in a pub having a pint on his own, minding his own business, and before you know what's happened, all hell's broke loose, with three lunatics coming in, you know, screaming and hollering, and he then goes to the defence of everybody.
No,
I mean, when he was fighting off, I didn't hear anybody then complaining about a criminal record he might have had. It's outrageous.
I think the bottom line on it is quite straightforward. The whole process is black and white. There's no room for sound judgment anymore in most of the law issues. And I think if sound judgment existed at this moment in time, and the person that was considering Roy's case would see that it would be far different to what other issues come up about people that perhaps have got a criminal record of some kind.
I think more broadly as well, we are a society that deals with forgiveness, and the whole point of the criminal justice system in theory is to punish, but it's also to rehabilitate,
well,
right?
I mean, when this thing first happened, i.e. the incident, right, I mean, it just shows you what kind of country we're turning into. I mean, it was about a week, 10 days old, and all of a sudden I see this headline about the Lion of London Bridge, and it was some incident, and I thought straight away, oh, they've set him up. I then found out that this incident had been about 18 months prior, and somebody somewhere has gone prying through all this video to dig this bloke out. And you think, well, what kind of country we got here?
That's journalists.
You know what I mean?
Surely he should be judged on what he did that night, and on that alone he should be compensated. If he's got convictions, he served whatever they gave him, time or whatever.
Yeah. No, I agree absolutely. If you'd like to support Roy, he does need your help, according to Millwall fan Jane Jacob. She's crowdfunding for him. Jane says he saved lives, he's been denied compensation and needs a break. Please find it in your hearts. If you'd like to contribute to that Just Giving, you can do so by going to justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Janie Jacob. Another wonderful Millwall fan show in which we've set the world to rights, not just on football, but on the law as well. And you'll have to join us next week. We'll be getting our teeth into more of the pre-season action.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.